Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, flying solo again today with another part of our Foundation series in an episode I'm going to call 7 Steps to Better Piloting. Our goal with this video is to try to make it easier to help reduce misplays and to have an easy-to-use heuristic that you can use to make decisions during gameplay. This was actually a request from one of our listeners who wanted to know what can we do to try to improve our game and try to make things easier. And in general, I break this down into 2 basic points. You want to verbalize everything, and you want to arrange everything. Verbalizing everything allows you to just speak out loud. You are very prone to making mistakes when the human mind does not process language and thoughts very well. In general, we have a lot of mental shortcutting that you use, and when you speak out loud, it forces you to work past your mental shortcutting to put it into the spoken language that we need to be effective. This really helps to fill some of those gaps and force us to focus in on those that we are often left with as a result of mental shortcutting. Meanwhile, arranging everything, Magic is a physical card game, and actually grouping things together can be very helpful as you manipulate them to make it easier to remember on yourself. So we're going to go through these step by step. We're going to talk about announcing your faces, reading your cards out loud, asking questions, announcing your triggers. When we talk about arranging everything, we're going to talk about grouping like things together, putting proactive effects up front, and sorting your hand with a plan. So let's get started right at the beginning with not step one, but step zero, and that would be rule zero. Before the game starts, we have a very useful rule zero that was added by the Commander Rules Committee and the Rules Advisory Group, the CAG. This happened recently, and it has been a real boon to our format. In general, I tend not to go with hidden commander variants or everyone count down from 5 and then flip your commander over. Rule Zero really encourages us to have a good, healthy talk before the game starts about what kind of decks we want to play at the table. For example, I like to introduce my decks and say, Karlov of the Ghost Council is a balanced value deck which is really good at taking down large single threats, as Karlov's ability of pay a white, a black, and remove 6+1/+1 counters from Karlov of the Ghost Council would say to exile target creature. So if one of my opponents really wants to try out their brand new Voltron-style deck, I probably will offer to switch off of Karlov at that point. It might be just a little bit too much to have a deck there that is a strong, hard counter to what you're trying to do. Well, Rule Zero is also all about verbalizing communication, but let's get started with some other tips that are really important during gameplay itself. So when you start gameplay, I think it's really important to announce your phases as you go through them. I've been playing since 1995, and still, to this day, whenever I play, even if it seems elementary, I announce my phases as I go through them. Untap. Upkeep. I will literally sweep my hand across my playmat and force myself to look at my board before I announce any upkeep triggers. And if I have no triggers, I will say no triggers before my hand goes to my library to draw my card for turn. I will then say pre-combat main phase or before combat. Then I will announce combat. Even if I'm not planning on attacking, this gives me a chance to look over my creatures, view my board, and then sweep my hand across to say no attacks. If I'm going to be attacking, I like to declare the opponent that I'm attacking in order to get their attention, and then which creatures are going to be attacking them. I will then say after combat and any other post-combat main phase effects that I have, I will then announce move to end step. And then, if there's nothing else going on, then pass the turn. Even this is shortcutting in places, but these are the places where priority will be passed, and this is where the most important triggers are likely to happen. So if I'm looking through this, when you are announcing your phases, there's a lot that's going on just in my simple Karlov deck. During my upkeep, I have my Dreadhorn Invasion that's trying to amass and make tokens for me. And then I've added sagas like the Birth of Meletus to my deck, which is going to trigger during my draw step. And then at end step, I have my Griffin Airy, which could potentially be making me even more tokens if I gained enough life. It's really important to announce your phases as you move through them. You will find that you make fewer mistakes if you are making this part of your plan. Next, read your cards out loud. This is not meant to be a kind of snarky reading the card explains the card sort of thing. I've been playing this game for a lot of years. I remember when Necropotence was that new confusing card. Our friendly local gaming shop, shout out to Dungeon Games in Fort Myers in Florida, often has a lot of newer players, and I've gotten into the habit of just not assuming that the person sitting across from me knows what a card does. I will offer to read the card, and I will often read the card even if it is fairly well understood, just to get into the habit of doing that for a newer player. This isn't just as a courtesy for my opponents, but it's a chance for me to then look back at my card and make sure that I'm processing it properly, and catch any mistakes I may have made when I was reading the card mentally. For example, I built an entire deck around Miri Weatherlight Duelist, not realizing that the card doesn't actually protect Planeswalkers while she's tapped. Oops. You will often find yourself also catching things that you may have misread on a card, and at times, you will put the onus on you to explain the cards to other players. In my training, I learned a lot about trying to make sure that if you know something, you should know it well enough to teach it. For example, what's the difference between Mother of Runes and Giver of Runes? These are both one white mana creatures, and they both are clerics that can give creatures protection from colors. But what's the difference between them? Well, the important difference is that Giver of Runes says another target creature, while Mother of Runes simply says target creature, which means Mother of Runes can give a Giver of Runes protection from red. Giver of Runes could give Mother of Runes protection from red. Mother of Runes can tap to give herself protection from red, but Giver of Runes cannot affect herself with that ability because of that simple another. That's the type of word that you could easily miss when you're simply reading the card in your head and not necessarily looking at it directly. It's also very helpful, I found, to count out loud as well. This makes it much less likely that you're going to miss something while counting, as oftentimes other players will point it out to you if they notice that you miscounted something. Most commonly, this is going to be something I'm going to do when I'm trying to tap to pay for a spell. So Austere Command is going to be white, white, and then 1, 2, 3, 4. Slowing down in this way can also be very helpful as you're tapping your mana sources to make sure you're tapping your mana sources properly, and you're not going to accidentally tap a land that you need for some part of your plan later on in the turn or later in the turn cycle. This is also useful in things like counting for devotion to a Theros god, or counting the number of elves for a Priest of Titania activation. Next, ask questions. Again, I remember Necropotence being a new card. Nobody knows every card in Commander. Even the most efficient staples are not something that everybody memorizes. I will routinely ask people to, can you read that for me? If for something basic like Path to Exile, because I frequently forget whether the basic land you get from having one of your creatures Path to Exiled is going to come into play tapped or not tapped. You're not stupid for not knowing what a card does. This is a format that includes the entire history of Magic. Nobody expects you to remember all four modes on Cryptic Command. That's going to be on the player who is casting the spell to announce, and honestly, taking an interest in other people's decks is a great way to bond over the format. This also includes things like polling the table about threat assessment when you're not sure, particularly if you're sitting down together someday again, we can go to Magic Fests with unfamiliar pods and going, hey, how big of a problem is it if that player resolved this Mirari's Wake? Oh, he's in a tokens deck. This probably is a thing that I should counter then. Polling the table about threats and asking these questions does not make you look stupid. Again, it shows you're taking an interest in the game, and it allows other players to give you their own input on threat assessment and can often lead to better interactions and better games in general. Last but certainly not least when it comes to verbalizing everything, announce your triggers. I physically point at cards as triggers are going onto the stack. This is something I learned from watching CDH gameplay videos with groups like Laboratory Maniacs, Play to Win, Playing with Power. These are very helpful approaches. It forces you to look at the board. And with something like Alex's Winota, Joiner of Forces deck, that is a deck where we will sit there and go, okay, you have three non-human creatures attacking with Winota, so that's three Winota triggers. I will literally hold my hand up, even though we've only played this on video so far, with my finger extended and say, okay, first six cards, second six cards, third six cards. This enables us to make sure that we're doing it correctly, that we're not missing any triggers. It's also really helpful when trying to work out more complex triggers to physically look at and touch the cards as the triggers are going onto the stack. For example, going back to the Karlov deck I've been using as a frequent example in this video. Dreadhorde Invasion is going to trigger during my upkeep, where I will lose a life and amass one. But if I also have other cards on the table, they may interact together, so I will go through it step by step. Upkeep, Dreadhorde Invasion trigger. I'm going to amass one. I'll get my zombie token with a +1/+1 counter on it. That is then going to trigger my Soul Warden or other Soul Sisters types effects. When another creature enters the battlefield, I gain one life. I have a life gain trigger. Karlov is then going to be triggered as a result of that, and I will get my 2+1+1 counters on Karlov of the Ghost Council. By physically walking through it one step at a time, touching each card as I do it, it is much less likely that I'm going to miss triggers or for another player across the table to not be able to follow what is going on. Now, physically interacting with the cards moves on to our next category of tips and tricks, and that is to arrange everything. And this starts with grouping like things. Again, this is a physical card game, and you can manipulate the cards to make it easier on your brain. I like to make sure you start by putting cards with similar triggers or similar effects together. This goes beyond simply creatures go in the front, lands go in the back. Humans, as I said, are very good at chunking, as remembering groups of information more than individual information. This is why phone numbers are arranged in the way that they are. This is much easier to remember that a number is 461 and not a 4, a 6, and a 1. So, cards with similar triggers go together. My Soul Sisters, Soul Warden, Soul's Attendant, Oriok Champion, anything that's going to trigger and give me life gain when a creature enters the battlefield, I want all of those things together in one spot. But I also want them to be near my payoffs. In my Karlov deck, I run cards like Dawn of Hope. Dawn of Hope is 1 and a white for an enchantment. Whenever I gain life, I may pay 2 generic mana. If I do, I draw a card. I can also pay 3 and a white to make a 1/1 white soldier creature token with lifelink. That's great. Those can again feed Soul Warden. It's an expensive way to draw cards, but it's still a very useful way to draw cards when I've intentionally limited the deck quite a bit. Cards which matter at similar times during the turn should also be grouped together. So I already mentioned Dreadhorde Invasion as one of my token generators, but I also run cards like Bitter Blossom in the deck, which says at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 1 life and create a 1/1 black fairy rogue creature token with flying. I run cards like Aether Vial, which says at the beginning of your upkeep, you may put a charge counter on Aether Vial and then tap and put a creature card with a CMC equal to the number of charge counters on Aether Vial from your hand onto the battlefield. By having all these cards grouped together on my table, it makes it very easy for me to make sure I don't miss things that are going to be triggering during my upkeep. This goes for apart from just the upkeep for cards that may be used throughout the other parts of the turn. For example, cards that are going to be useful during combat. If I'm going to have my Tome of Legends on the table, which gets a page counter every time my commander enters the battlefield or attacks, and I can cash in those page counters later to draw cards, I want that near my creatures that are going to be attacking, like Karlov of the Ghost Council or Sarah Ascendant. Other cards which are going to trigger if there are attacks, for example, Legion's Landing says it's an enchantment for 1 white mana. Whenever I attack with 3 or more creatures, I transform Legion's Landing into a land that will make more 1/1 white life-linking vampire creature tokens. These are things I really want to make sure I don't miss, so I tend to group these together on my battlefield. It's also really important that you group your like mana together. I've gotten into the habit of trying to make sure that I have all of my colors of mana sitting together. So all my swamps and lands that produce black I have together. All my plains and lands that produce white mana I have together. Then lands that are more versatile that can tap for either color of mana I like to put in between them. I'm also getting into the habit of putting my mana producing artifacts like Mind Stone down with my lands. This makes it much easier when I do my physical count and touch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lands, I know I will have 6 mana to use on that turn. I also like to arrange my mana so that if I have a dedicated slot like Cabal Coffers, that I can simply put my Soul Ring right next to it or sometimes even right underneath of it. So I always am using generic mana to activate my Cabal Coffers. I want to turn generally colorless mana into colored mana anyway, and I'm less likely to tap my lands incorrectly if I have them arranged like this. Last but not least, keep that graveyard tidy. As someone who really likes graveyard decks, how many Scrap Trawler decks have I built at this point? It's really important to keep your graveyard nice and neat. By looking through it frequently, arranging it frequently, you're less likely to miss out on the fact that you just need to draw a land so you can get your Bloodghast back onto the battlefield. But it's also nice to be in the habit of doing it because if you're a graveyard player like me, you don't want to let slide that you may have a card like Reanimate or Animate Dead or Return to the Ranks to get a 1 or potentially a bunch of creatures back out of your graveyard. The more you're in a regular habit of simply checking through your graveyard, announcing relevant cards that are in it, the less likely your opponents are going to suspect that you have a reanimation effect ready to go. You have already kind of established that as part of your regular rhythm and routine for the game. Now, let's get more specific. When we're arranging our cards, I personally like to make sure that proactive cards go up front. Cards which change the game state for everybody or trigger based on the actions of other players are most easily going to be remembered if they're near to your opponents. So moving them to the middle of the table will put them in line of sight for you and for your opponents much more often. Stacks pieces like Meekstone, a one-mana artifact which says creatures with power through your raider don't untap during their controller's untap steps. Repeated draw effects like Rhystic Study. I think everyone knows what Rhystic Study does at this point, but for those not in the know, it's an enchantment. Whenever an opponent casts a spell, you may draw a card unless that player plays one generic mana. And again, in my Karlov deck, the Soul Sisters. I'll put my Soul Warden, Soul's Attendant, and similar cards up front because these will trigger and give me life anytime any creature enters the battlefield, not just my creatures. This means that every time I watch my opponents taking actions, my eyes will sweep across the table and I will have another chance to make sure my eyes pass over the relevant cards and I am less likely to miss any relevant triggers or effects. I also really like to put my Rattlesnake cards up front, cards which are going to have an effect that I can spend and are trying to deter my opponents from doing things that I don't want to see them doing. Cards like Seal of Cleansing or Seal of Doom. These are enchantments you can sacrifice to destroy an artifact or enchantment or destroy a non-black creature, respectively. But also effects like Executioner's Capsule, an artifact for one black mana, you can pay one and a black, tap and sacrifice it to destroy target non-black creature. By having these up front, not only do my eyes go across them every time I look from what I'm doing to what my opponents are doing on the battlefield anyway, but they're also right there up front for my opponents to know that I have an answer sitting right in front of me. And this may just subtly deter them to go elsewhere with their action for the turn. Now, the last thing we want to talk about with arranging everything is to make sure you sort your hand with a plan. Some people like to flick their cards and shuffle their hands to theoretically obfuscate information from their opponents so they don't know what's in their hand, what was drawn most recently. Particularly in the world of VDH, that's not strictly necessary, and it's not something that I ever got into the habit of doing even before this. I prefer to keep my hand organized, roughly in order of my priority of how I want to cast things that turn. My preferred hand order is from left to right, where I'm going to have the lands I plan to drop for the turn all the way on the left, and then, after I make my land drop, because that'll bring me to my new mana for the turn, I have the cards that I want to cast for turn. Then, I want to think ahead a little bit and say, well, if I'm going to cast my Daxos Blessed by the Sun this turn, next turn I'm going to be up to 3 mana, so I'll want to cast Buried Alive. And the turn after that, maybe a reanimation effect to start getting back some of the creatures that I have now in my graveyard. Then, I'm going to use any extra lands that I'm not planning to use this turn as spacers in my hand, so that way I have a pretty clear division of my plan, and then my insurance. The side of my hand all the way on the right is where I like to keep my instant speed interaction. Cards like Path to Exile, Anguished Unmaking, Counterspell type effects. I want these things staring me in the face as much as possible. Since I'm right-handed, I tend to fan my hand out, so the card all the way on the right I have full view of. It makes it much harder to miss that I have interaction going on at any time. I like to use my downtime during other people's turns to sort my hand and do my counts to make sure that I have a plan and my plan is actually going to work with the mana that I have available. I'll arrange my cards for this turn, for the turn after that, and for the turn after that as much as is possible so I know what I'm going to do and I don't take up as much time for the game during my own turn trying to work through this. Another thing that's important when you're sorting your hand, particularly for more like combo intensive decks, is to kind of use your tutor as a placeholder for a specific combo piece. So, for example, a very common combo in CDH as a game-winning combo would be to attempt to resolve a Thassa's Oracle, hold priority while its enter the battlefield triggers on the stack, and then use an effect like Demonic Consultation to name a card that is not in your deck, and for one black mana, exile your library, meaning that the enter the battlefield trigger of Thassa's Oracle will see a card, a library with 0 cards in it, and you win the game on the spot. So in my CDH deck, my Opus Thief deck, I will often have my cards arranged so my plan is, first, I'm going to try to bait out any counter spells or just test the waters by casting Silence for 1 white mana. If that goes through, great, I win. At that point, my opponents can't cast spells this turn, and I can do everything else with impunity. Then, I know I want to cast my Demonic Tutor. I'm going to use that to search for my Demonic Consultation out of my library. Once I get Demonic Consultation into hand, my goal is to cast Thassa's Oracle for 2 blue mana. She enters the battlefield, hold priority on her enters the battlefield trigger, cast Demonic Consultation, and hopefully win the game. Any interaction comes up, that's why I have my instant speed effects like Pact of Negation and other counter spells all the way on the right-hand side of my hand. I have them staring me in the face. I am ready to go no matter what my opponents try to do. Well, that's the plan anyway, and as we know, no plan tends to survive interaction with the enemy. Now, last but not least, when it comes to sorting your hand, I personally don't play many miracles, but it is good to be in the habit of looking at the new card you've drawn each turn, separate from the rest of your hand. This is very helpful, even if you're not playing miracle cards like Reforge the Soul, because it gives you a chance to look at the new card by itself and to try to determine how does this impact the plan you've already laid out in the rest of your hand. You can use this as a chance to see if you want to adjust your plans for the turn. You can put it where you think it is then going to be most relevant, whether it's going to be this turn, next turn, the turn after that, to really arrange your hand and take advantage of the sorting system that we discussed here. So that's about it. These are the 7 steps to better piloting. Verbalizing everything starts with rule 0. You want to talk about your deck and make sure you're going to have a good game ahead of you. Once the game starts, you want to announce your phases as you go through them. You want to read your cards out loud to make sure you and your opponents understand what the cards do. You're going to ask questions if a card is unfamiliar, or if you can't quite remember a rule or how a card works, or even if you're looking for help with threat assessment. You're going to announce your triggers as you work through them to make things easier on yourself and your opponents. You're going to also arrange everything. Group like things together. Group your lands of particular colors together to make sure you tap your mana in the most efficient way possible. You're going to group cards that take effects at different times throughout the turn together to make sure you're less likely to miss any of those triggers. You're going to make sure that cards that are triggering in response to different or similar effects are going to be arranged in the same piles. And you're going to make sure that you keep that graveyard nice and neat and tidy. You don't want them to know when you have a reanimate in your hand after all. You're going to put your proactive cards up front on your board, so every time you or your opponents look across the table, you get another chance to see them and not miss them. And you're going to sort your hand with a plan, using your downtime between your turns to have your hand ready to go with your plays for this turn, next turn, and future turns. But always remember that if you've got that instant speed interaction, you want to keep that at the far side of your hand, so it's the first thing you see when you fan your hand out. So, if I missed any tips or tricks that you like to use to keep your play tight, let us know. You can add us on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG. Our email is gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Or, of course, leave us a comment on YouTube, where we're Gemstone Mind Podcast. If you're an audio-only listener, this is one of those episodes that's going to be really good to see visually, as we have a lot of visual representations on screen. But until next time, I'm John. The full crew will be back next time for another exciting episode of the full-length audio podcast. Until then, take care. You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG or send us an email at GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.